over him. Not Trudy. Pretty bad, he heard a voice mutter. Dr. Kapstein. Ridiculously, Grant wondered if she'd thrown up again in her spacesuit on the way over from Farside. With Trudy helping, Kapstein and whoever else had come to Korolev with her worked Grant into a fresh spacesuit. He felt them lift his pain-racked body and carry him to the shelter's airlock. The pain seemed to be easing, but he felt woozy, as if he were muffled in cotton batting. Painkillers, he thought. Kapstein's pumped me full of painkillers. When he opened his eyes again, he saw that he was in the locker area at Farside. Kapstein and Trudy and even Carter McClintock were looking down at him. His nose wrinkled. Smells like salad dressing. Chris Cardenas's youthful face bent over him. Stopgap defense against the disassemblers, she said. We used all the salad oil in the kitchen, and lots of other oils. Great. Dr. Kapstein's face looked grim. We've got to get you to Cellini. But quarantine. The quarantine's lifted, Cardenas said. Now that we know what we're looking for, Cellini's open again. Good. Kapstein said to Cardenas, whatever you put into him probably has saved his life. Therapeutic nanomachines, Cardenas said. They've stopped his bleeding and even reduced the subcranial edema. With a knowing smile, Cardenas said, my little nanobugs have their uses. Edie Elgin rode back to Cellini with Grant. Trudy wanted to go too, but Ulrich insisted there was too much work to be done for him to allow her to leave Farside. Grant rode on one of the Lauber's passenger compartment seats, tilted back almost flat. Sitting on the seat next to him, Edith shook her head mournfully. The biggest news story since the war, and I can't say peep about it, she complained. Even my husband has told me to keep quiet about it. Feeling lightheaded but free of pain, Grant asked, how can you cover up Mrs. Halleck's death? Hopper accident, Edith said with a shrug. Blame it on the guy she was with, that Oberman fellow. It was really my fault, Grant told himself. But he said nothing to Edie Elgin. Chris Cardenas stayed at Farside, supervising the cleanup as the vanadium-gobbling nanomachines ran to the end of their programmed lifespans and went inert. Grant fidgeted in his hospital bed, wondering how his people were getting along without him. By the time he was able to walk and exercise normally, Trudy flew in to see him. Grant was sitting up in his bed watching a news broadcast on the wall-mounted television set when she appeared at the door of his hospital room, looking bright and fresh and totally happy. He jumped out of bed as she ran to him. They embraced and kissed, and he reveled in the warmth of her. Then he realized he was wearing a ridiculous, flimsy hospital gown open at the back. I'm not dressed very well, he said, grinning. You look great to me, said Trudy. My head's okay, he told her as he led her to the only chair in the room. The medics say the nanomachines inside me accelerated my healing. I ought to be going back to Farside tomorrow.
I know. I came to see you and go back with you.
Ulrich let you go? Grant asked as he sat on the edge of the bed. Nodding, she replied,
the professor is just about delirious. Carter's decided that the McClintock Trust will fully fund Farside's operations for the next 5 years. We won't need to beg money from Cellini.
No wonder he's happy.
And my paper,
she hesitated, then amended.
Our paper on the composition of New Earth's atmosphere has been favorably refereed. It'll be in the next issue of the International Astrophysics Journal.
That's terrific, Grant said. Your first published paper.
And it's an important one. The professor's pushing to finish the scopes at Korolev and Gagarin. Once we get all three working together, we'll be able to produce detailed imagery of the planet's surface.
And the Elser will get his Nobel Prize after all.
Looks like, said Trudy.
Grant felt his brows knitting into a scowl. But it's not fair. You're doing the work. He's just sitting on his butt and taking the credit. What do you get, Trudy? She got up from the chair and came smiling to the bed and sat down beside Grant.
I get you, said Trudy. The professor can have his Nobel. I get the real prize.
Epilogue. 6 years later.
The sign on the office door was spanking new. T. Yost, Director, Angel Observatory.
Trudy felt weird sitting at the desk that she still thought of as Professor Ulrich's. As soon as Grant came into the office with their daughter, she got up, came around the desk, and sat with her husband and 3-year-old Gwen on the side of the long table facing the softly glowing wall screen. Grant leaned across Gwen to give Trudy a peck on the lips. The little girl fidgeted in the chair between her parents.
"The ceremony will be starting in a few minutes," Trudy said.
Grant glowered at her darkly. "I still think you're the one who ought to get the prize. Or at least he should have told them he'd share it with you."
"We've been over that a zillion times, Grant. Let the professor have his moment of glory."
Before Grant could say anything more, Trudy called out,
"Display Sirius C."
The wall screen instantly showed an image of the planet. Lush green landforms and deeply blue oceans, decked with streams of white clouds.
"New Earth!"
Gwen pointed a chubby finger at the display. Grant stared at the image, knowing that it was the result of more than a year's worth of painstaking work, taking the interference patterns from Farsight's trio of telescopes and meticulously building up a visual image of the exoplanet.
"That's right, dear," Trudy said to her daughter. "That's what Mommy is studying."
Grant said, "I'll take you to Selene, Gwenny, and show you the ship they're building. It's going to take people to New Earth."
"Me too?"
Grant laughed. "Maybe. Not the first ship out, but maybe someday." Trudy told Gwen,
"You can go if you want to, darling. You can go as far as your dreams take you."
Nearly 400,000 kilometers from Farside, the Stockholm Symphony Hall was filled to capacity. Standing in his formal white tie and tails with the 8 other Nobel laureates as they waited off stage, Jason Ulrich could hear the audience's murmurings. He pictured a vast sea of people come from all over the world to witness the ceremony. The personal aide that the Nobel Foundation had given him was at Ulrich's side, ready to guide him to the chair waiting for him on the stage. Ulrich was determined to walk in unassisted.
"I did it in the rehearsal this morning," he told himself. "I have the layout of the stage pictured in my mind perfectly."
"Professor Jason Ulrich, astrophysics," called the master of ceremonies. Ulrich pulled his arm away from the aide's hand and strode out onto the stage, carefully counting his steps. A wave of applause rose from the audience, and he felt tears in his sightless eyes. He smelled the profusion of flowers banked along the rear of the stage, but the sensation produced no image in his visual cortex. He sat and waited while the other laureates came in one by one, and introductory speeches were made. When it came time to receive the actual award from the King of Sweden, Ulrich rose to his feet and walked to the podium in measured steps. Behind him, he knew, a giant LCD screen had been lowered to show images of Sirius C. He heard the audience gasp as the images appeared on the screen. The king congratulated him and handed him the surprisingly heavy portfolio containing the gold memorial medal and a paper-thin, flexible display screen that also showed images of the planet produced by the Farside interferometer. Jason Ulrich stood before the hushed audience, while behind him a picture of an achingly beautiful world of green continents and blue oceans, dotted with white clouds, held the audience, the functionaries of the Nobel Foundation, the King of Sweden, the other Nobel laureates, and the whole world in rapt awe. New Earth. A world like our own. Unpopulated, no cities, no sign of intelligent life. The Cyclops radio telescope array had scanned the planet thoroughly. It was silent. But it was a world strikingly similar to our own. A new world, beckoning.
This concludes the reading of Farside by Ben Bova. Copyright 2013 by Ben Bova. This book was read by Stefan Rudnicki. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with the Barbara Bova Literary Agency and was produced in 2013.